This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
All right, so we've got Gary joining us, everybody, for a little fireside chat. I think this is a great opportunity. I'm glad you're all here. So, Gary, you want to take it away?
I would. Team, good afternoon. Good morning if you're in LA time. Really excited to be here with all of you. This is usually one of my favorite things to do in the year. I'm extremely fond of the youngsters embarking on the beginning of their career. But usually what I do in this environment is just do heavy Q&A. I really just want to be here for you. I think my opening remarks are usually very focused on making you feel safe so you can actually ask your real questions instead of some sort of bullshit answer or question that, doesn't mean anything to you, just kind of checking the box. Like, let's extract as much value out of here as possible. If it's vain or specific, you can imagine I have all the context and can answer anything. And obviously I'm aware of like the content I put out into the world, and maybe there's some other categories of interests or curiosities or anything, truly anything that you're interested in asking, I'm interested in trying to answer. And so that's the format I'd like to take here. But first, thank you. I know you probably had many options of where you could be doing your internship, and so we're flattered that you wanted to be here, and I hope it's going well. Let's start with that, actually. I know we're a little bit in. Maybe you can use the comments section here, or you can unmic. Give me a general sense of how it's going so far.
It's a family.
Do you sense that, Andrew?
I absolutely do. I worked at one other marketing agency for about a month, and it was just silos, like account creative. Everyone does their own thing. No one talks. And then they just kind of like mash into something and give it to a client.
I love that. Izzy, what do you expand on the culture?
I've been an intern and this is week 4, and everything about the company and the culture has been phenomenal. I stepped into the LA office last week on Wednesday for the town hall meeting and all hands meeting. And I just felt so much like, I had a lot of anxiety walking in and, traveling to LA, but, after meeting everyone's face and, giving out hugs and handshakes, like, honestly, I feel like I belong there, even though I'm an intern, but hopefully it can be long-term.
I love that. Anybody else with anything on how it's going so far?
Totally agree, Izzy. I feel like people are king here, and I'm coming into the office a couple of days a week, and my absolute favorite thing to do is eavesdrop on people's conversations, because that's where I get the most tidbits. Like, I'll come in one day and just learn so much. Like, I'm the legal intern, and just from interacting with other teams, really cool.
I love what Zoom has been able to do for scale, and there's plenty of times that this is the right format. But no question, the thing that is lost is the serendipity of what you're talking about now, the osmosis of just being around it, the conversations, the things of that nature, very much on my mind. If the world goes into a hybrid in perpetuity, like, what are the things that I need to create that allow for more of that? Because I agree with you, Maddie, like, there's the meetings. Alex, I'd love to get your perspective on this. I feel like everything's much more efficient in Zoom life. Like, everyone's on time, but so the black and white is better, right? You're getting more meetings, so you're getting more done, but the by accident nuances that are very valuable are real. And so to that point, without knowing everyone's situation or where you are in the world or what you plan on doing, if you've got the option to go into the offices for a little bit, it's probably a good use of time, especially if you've been predominantly only Zoom and you can. It's probably good to just mix it up just for the serendipity of what might come out of it.
I think that's good. Has everybody, who's been in the office? Raise your hand. Good. And I think the rest of you, you still have about 3 weeks, right? 3.5 weeks left of the internships. I would definitely,
obviously, Sarah, Sam, others that didn't raise their hand, oh shit, I'm in Idaho for the rest of this time. But if you can, it's probably worthwhile. Yep. All right, good. Let's go into Q&A, like literally everything and anything. And, you can be very, very specific about something I said in all hands, or it could be incredibly general, but I just want to kind of rock and roll with this Q&A.
I do have a question. It might be a little bit, you know, something down the line, but, you know, just as a business mindset, I'm very curious, you know, how is everything going to change in the world? Are you assuming there's going to be a recession, or how is Vayner going to turn to that? How are you going to react to that? What are your ideas?
Yeah, that's a great question, Izzy. I've been running this company for the last 12 weeks with full belief of a significant recession, because that's just a good way to think about it. Whether that happens or not, the reality is I don't know. But there's enough in the air and enough in the fundamentals and enough in the common sense and enough in the pattern recognition, spidey senses that, and most importantly, the sucky thing about being the CEO of anything or the head of anything is really it's your responsibility. And so I would be grossly negligent if I was acting out of hope instead of preparation. You know, Vayner's positioned in a very unique way. We are such a disruptor. And one of the things we disrupt is we believe that agencies are expensive. And so, you know, there's a real argument that, you know, for example, recession comes hard. All of you will stop buying $4 coffees. And you might, so Starbucks loses and Maxwell House wins because now you're buying coffee to make it home, right? That's kind of how I see Vayner. Hardcore recession comes, Publicis and WPP lose and Vayner wins. And so, even though I may believe that in the macro, in the micro, three or four of our biggest clients could get hurt so much that we could lose revenue and we might be on our back foot. So I've been very much planning profitability, contribution margins, raise cycles, other expenses, out of pocket, everything I've been very thoughtful about.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Of course.
I have a question as well.
Please, Jack.
Gary, actually, I don't know if you remember me, but you invested in my company on Small Business Champions, a TV show that never ended up airing. I owned the toffee company.
Jack, that is fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, you remember me?
Jack, I'm going to keep letting you talk. I don't want to bullshit you. I think I will get there in a second. I know how my brain works. You're going to give me a little more context.
Okay.
Are you based in California?
I am. I was living there. Well, right now. I was there for a little bit of the summer, but now I go to Texas.
Yeah, I remember. That's how my brain works. I needed a few. I can remember certain little things. Guys, I shot a pilot for CBS that was Shark Tank for kids. That was the most fun. It was me, I, Justine, Sierra, and Cameron
Dallas
were the four judges. And it was fucking amazing. It was awesome. It was a great concept. It didn't, you know, it was greenlit, but then less, the CEO of CBS got ousted during the Me Too thing and the show got canceled because of it. It's amazing how macro things can adjust micro realities. But anyway, dude, that's fucking amazing, Jack. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, you as well. I'm loving that I'm working for you now. I know we kind of went out of contacts for a little bit, but
we have to see if we can get the clip of that pitch.
I have not found it anywhere just because it hasn't aired. But yeah, I totally agree with you. That was what, like 5 years ago or something.
Make a note that I have to email Lance Klein about Small Business Champions. Thanks. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask, I'm working remote, and so I was kind of wondering the best way to, I mean, there's 3 weeks left, but I would just want to maximize my time spent by making connections and networking with people. And I was just wondering the best way about going out with that.
Slack and LinkedIn. I'm not even joking. You should literally go to VaynerMedia's LinkedIn page and then connect with every employee that is currently employee on LinkedIn. And then whomever connects back with you. First, you should make sure your profile on LinkedIn, if you have one, says that you're interning at Vayner. Go connect with everyone at Vayner. And then every morning for the next 3 weeks, when you wake up and four more people connected with that you, literally send them a message inside of LinkedIn and tell them who you are and what you do and where you are and say what's up. One of you should do that.
Also, Jack, you should also reach out to your manager too and just like ask them for a list of 5 to 10 names of people that they think would be great for you to meet throughout Vayner. They'll definitely do that and just reach out to people. They'll 100%.
Yeah, back to the earliest part of this meeting where people are like family and the vibe, like people, like senior people in the company know like that it would break my heart if I heard that they never replied to interns reaching out to me. Best case and worst case, that it will be a problem for them if they don't reply back. And so like you'll get a good audience on that.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, brother.
Hi, I have a leadership kind of question, just kind of within the company and then kind of outwards. Sorry for the lot in the background.
Wait, Sarah, before you ask the question, can you just tell me where you are? Because that background is dope.
It's the public hotel. It's close to where I'm staying, and I'm going to go into office tomorrow, but quickly, awesome. I jumped in here to get on the call.
Love it.
Go Sorry ahead. If it's kind of loud.
Go ahead. We can get
through. But kind of going, I'm going to be a senior in college, and so kind of thinking about leadership roles and things that I hold at school, how is a way that you resolve conflict within the management teams or kind of like conflict between coworkers and things like that? Just because that's something I run into a lot and figured you might have a really good way to.
Yeah, it's been, you know, I've gone through the process for years and have evolved in this a lot. I believe currently the best way to solve conflict is through kind candor, which is why it's such a big thing at our company. So many of the things that have not worked out for me in my life, professionally and personally, have been because I've been conflict adverse and I tried to figure it out a different way. And I see a very big difference at Vayner. Alex, I'd love to get your perspective at Vayner. I feel like we are in a very different place than we were 3-4 years ago, where we tried to like be around the bush and this way and try to bubble gum and tape and hope and pray. And because we just, you know, we are nice, and thus being able to say to somebody, you did this wrong or you're doing this. Like, so, you know, in that scenario, if you have two people, what I'm trying to do more of is really get the two to sit, make it safe for them to be kind, candorous, which is a real challenge because the world right now, the political climate, everyone just wants to be right. Like we lack compassion and empathy and things of that nature, but you have to create a framework where both parties feel safe to communicate true feelings. Communication solves everything. It really does, but it's hard. And so like you have to be the beacon of that framework.
Yes, I like that too. Like kind of like sitting in the middle maybe of a situation and just opening up to like a kind and open conversation sort of thing.
The reason the word kind is in the candor part is people use candor as an excuse to not be kind. And once someone, like if me and Faye had a conflict and my opening line's like, Faye, you're fucking, and that's it, it's over already. It's over. It's over. Like think about anybody in your family or in life where you have some conflict consistently, like your sister, your dad, your mom, whoever, it's always how they say it more than even what they're saying. I'm only triggered by my dad in how he's saying it, not even what he's saying. And that's why we created that positioning of kind candor, because if you really push on the kind part, all of a sudden that skit with me and Faye is like, Faye, I'm sure there's some stuff going on, but like this hurts my, that's just so different. It's already like, and so that's, it's also how we branded the Honey Empire, right? Honey versus vinegar. And again, all these years later, now that we're really pulling it off, is why all of you started with the words you started. Like this is now cultural here of like, you know, and so, but the candor part matters. We were all kind and honey. By not having candor, it put us in precarious spots. And so you got to find that balance.
I can kind of ask a follow-up question to that too. Is there something like a personal hobby or something outside of work that you think maybe helps you be a better leader or kind of enhances your mindset coming into work?
I actually think it could be anything. I think what leadership requires is for the leader, for her or himself, to be in a good place within themselves. It's very hard to have to be a great leader and help people with conflict if you have conflict with yourself. The amount of emotional strength required to be a mediator or absorb the tension and be a person of offense that creates resolution requires a lot of self-esteem, a lot of happiness within oneself. So the hobby or process can be anything. It could be as on the nose as meditation, therapy, you know, or it could be completely random. It could be archery and fishing and gardening that helps you, like whatever that release is. I think so much of what works for me is the lack of inner turmoil I have within my own self. It gives me tremendous capacity to absorb negativity, absorb conflict, absorb. Like, you know, and the way I think about absorbing is if you have a bucket of stress and anxiety, and that bucket is A, small and already almost filled, the second other people fill to it, it tips over. If your bucket is enormously big and has little in it, it can take on a lot, so much professionally. Like people are always like, how do you do 900 fucking thousand things? It has to do with what I'm telling you now. My emotional bucket is so empty that every day I can wake up and take 30. My life is 100% stress. Like, I don't think people understand like what it actually, it's every single second. Like there is no chance. How about this one? There's no chance that in 12 minutes when I transition to my next call and I look at my text messages or email, that there isn't at least one fire. It's impossible. You can only do that as a leader if you're in a good place. The reason so many people can't build big businesses, can't build big organization is the internal part. Their bucket's already full, thus any stress from the outside tips it, and then the whole thing's fucking broken for everyone. So whatever hobby allows you to not take your professional life seriously, AKA releases stress. I mean, garage sailing does that for me. I wouldn't call that as like the top of the list of what people think, right? And so for the normal things of golf and skiing and cooking and watching movies are amazing. I'm actually, you know, it's funny. Everyone sees me as like, go, go, go. I'm very pro hobby and releases because I think it's the balance. It's the same reason, same way I think about sleep. You know, like everybody wants to position me as like this going hard guy, but like I want 7-8 hours of sleep because I think I need that to have a productive 16 hours when I'm awake. And so I view sleep and hobbies very similar. I view, you know, watching a movie or playing video games for a full day or doing nothing on a Saturday as a recharge, offset, balance. And so I think it has all to do with internal capacity for stress.
I like that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'd love to follow up to that.
Yes, sir.
So you mentioned you have like a million things going on. A, how do you keep track of everything just like in your brain? Like how does your brain not fall apart dealing with a million different things? And on the actual level, how do you manage to do all that?
The number two one is infrastructure of other people, right? I have 4 full-time assistants, 2 chief of staffs. That's 6 full-time employees that are basically just making sure I can do all this stuff from a tactical standpoint. The first part's an interesting insight, Sam. The reason my brain doesn't break is I don't judge myself on making mistakes. This is a very interesting insight. The reason most people aren't able to do a lot of things or is because they don't realize their capacity is directly correlated with their judgment on themselves. So no different than I know that I have a fire after this meeting. I know every day I wake up, 1 or 2 things I do were wrong. And I think the reason everyone's so structured and taught in a school structured, right? Get A's every 90 days. Like I'm so comfortable in the gray and in the chaos. It's kind of like if I'm juggling 30 balls and I'm okay with dropping 16 of them because I'm still juggling 14 balls, while most people just want to juggle 1 because they don't want to drop it. And that dropping of the ball is some catastrophic event. You know, I react less seriously to an entire business I'm working on going to 0 and falling apart than some people do about having a bad meeting. That's how.
And just to follow up to that, were you always like that?
Yes. Because I got lucky slash, it's hard to really understand why in 4th grade I decided all of this was bullshit and I mailed it in. But at an extremely young age, in hindsight, it was my normal life. So I didn't realize at the time that it was unique. Now that I'm in my mid-40s, long before there was entrepreneurship and alternatives to getting straight A's, I somehow sensed that nothing good was going to come out of me conforming to this infrastructure. So it made me very comfortable with mistakes. I am devastated is the word I would use, that your generation, and obviously all of you are different, and maybe this is not relevant to any of you, but as a generation, we have demonized fear for all of you for so long that everyone's scared to fail. You know, sports used to be a really good thing for kids in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 50s, where like people got used to losing a lot, which kind of helped them. But then we even took away that. So now like everybody has to be a good student and everybody has to be, you know, on medicine if they're rambunctious in class, and we can't have anybody, we don't keep score in game. I mean, it fucking makes me want to, so you end up being, you know, a young adult and you've been so coddled that you fear losing when losing's the best. Losing's the best. Like learning how to fall in love with losing early on is an incredible indicator to one's capacity to have a happy life. Yet we went reverse for a long time. And my great hope is that y'all in 20 years, when you start parenting, will recognize some of the shortcomings of eighth place trophies and not keeping score and parent in a different reaction to that. Because I really do feel we're affected by that. And it's not just a Gen Z thing, it's a fucking societal thing. By the way, it goes very deep. It goes into our political climate. One's belief that you can't lose makes people want to win every argument. We can't have civil discussion anymore because people feel like you have to win the debate.
First of all, I couldn't agree more about that. I used to ref soccer and I always wanted to make sure the score was kept. I do have a general question about career. Like I said, I just finished my second year of law school. I'm going into choosing a career for after I graduate. And I would say like the number one reason why I wanted this position is because I love that the company's always taking risks and really on the next big thing. But for my own personal career, I'm for some reason afraid to do that. Do you have any like insight on your thought process when it comes to like risk management or what you're thinking about when you decide whether to hop on a trend that might ultimately fail or completely blow up?
I do worst case scenario planning. Like okay. I fully go into what is the worst thing that can happen? And the reality is almost nothing professionally is that scary. What? You have to move back home with your parents? What? You're gonna live with three family. So if that's like a shitty situation, what? You're gonna live with three roommates in a shitty like apartment? Like what? Everyone like does, I think that people should take the max risks from 20 to 30, because eventually worst case scenario starts looking like my kids are gonna be upset. you know, and so when it's still just you and you're a kid, the worst case scenarios are like, optical, they're not real. They're very keeping up with the Joneses. People's worst case scenario is their friend's gonna be further along and make more money and go on better vacations and buy nicer stuff. That's fucking frivolous bullshit. People are literally compromising their happiness and curiosity just to make sure that they can also make as much money as their classmate or afford to go to Miami and drink $20 cocktails too, like dumb shit. So I do worst case management, like, oh, if this fails, I'll make less. For me at this point in my career, it's I'll make less money if this fails. And I'm just okay with that. You know, I'm okay with way more extreme than that. I'm okay with having to sell something to maintain my lifestyle if this fails. Like, so what? Like, and I just think that humility and self-confidence are just unfortunately too foreign now. If you were grounded in humility and self-confidence, everything I just talked about means nothing, thus allowing you to be very high risk. Plus, it's also logical. What most kids will choose to do at 23, 22, they could go be crazy for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And if it doesn't work out, go get that job that they would have at 22. It's actually practical to be high risk in your early 20s, yet the world told you you're now a grown up, go ultra conservative. Usually based on one's keeping up with the Joneses or appeasing their parents' narrative. Both are horrible ideas.
Thank you.
Yes, appeasing a parent's narrative is the quickest way to not have a good relationship with a parent, because you will form resentment and blame them in your late 20s and early 30s. Most kids don't have the stomach to deal with the short-term conflict for long-term relationship. They appease, they do it, they wake up at 28, they aren't accountable that they made the choice, and they start pointing fingers at their parents that made them get the safe law job instead of the high risk law job. And it becomes a whole clusterfuck.
I got a question to that.
Hold on. Definitely. Let me get Kyla, because I saw her hand first. I'll get you out after Andrew.
Hi, Gary. Thank you. So what are your thoughts about recognizing employees, and with everybody working so hard in your company, how do you go about like something like employee of the month?
Employee of the month is completely subjective and will end up being more political than the alternative, is why I've never been in love with it. I mean, think about, it's completely arbitrary, right? It's like fashion or like creative. Like, I mean, we have thousands, yeah. You know what I mean? It you know, and so I don't like creating things that put us in a, like it, even with good intent, and I sense that with good intent, I think, and by the way, recognizing comes in all shapes and sizes. There's employees here who want to be recognized by getting a raise in August. There's employees who legitimately would rather get less of a raise, but get told to their face that they're doing a good job once a month instead. There are others who like the way we respect each other and like the kindness and all that and the freedom and like, and that's how they feel recognized in a macro, that we have like the right heart and soul, or like, you know, like, you know, so like the reality is there's 1,000 different ways that people want their recognition. It's why we try to get to know each other, because it comes in, you know, a lot of different shapes and sizes. But I think about it the most. It's how the whole currency of the organization works. The reason we have extraordinary retention in this company is because we think about recognition at scale. We just know it comes in 100 different forms. And maybe fun things that are at least the teeth are taken out, like employee of the month, could be reframed and recalculated and re-spoke to the organization and be a clever way to have some fun moments. So point taken, and something I'll marinate on.
Thank you.
Andrew, let's sneak this in before I have to get out of here.
Totally. I guess just in general, where do you get your trends from? Is there like a magic eight ball or like a gut instinct of any kind? You know, is there a process?
Yes, I'm a PCS.
I don't know what that means.
PCS is a post-creative strategist, which is a role in the strategy department here. Their job is to read all the comments on social media.
Have you ever found any specific funnel that you know is gold or anything?
Nope. It's hard work of following ungodly amounts of posts across 7 to 10 platforms, and then going on intuition when I saw something that might mean something, and then being okay, back to humility, back to Maddie, right? Being okay with spending an hour going down a rabbit hole of a magician on TikTok, only to find out that there's really nothing there, even though my 1 hour is extremely valuable. The humility of not overvaluing my time at the expense of my curiosity with the ability to find the insight that is scalable and meaningful is a framework that is been a unique competitive advantage for me. Most of my friends that are capable of figuring out trends early are too egotistical about their time, and thus don't put in the work in the trenches of the dirt. The end.
Thank you.
It's one of the reasons I always really respect Drake. If you look very carefully about how Drake navigates his career, he's incredibly good at having his ear to the street and knowing which artists are emerging. He's does a lot of similar things to me, where he like reaches out randomly to people on the way up. And I think it's a huge competitive advantage. Not only does it is it nice and relationship building? Imagine being an emerging artist, getting a DM from Drake that says, keep going. It's fucking insane. They go crazy when I do it, let alone fucking Drake. Two, it keeps them incredibly relevant because it's whoever is closest to the dirt, the street, the trenches, the people, that's who knows. And I think it is my core competitive advantage in the world. I'm way deeper in tons of different genres across all genders, races, demos, interests, subject matters than most people because I put in the work. And it's hard. Like Alex puts in real work on New York sports. And I know if I want to talk to, if we need to know what's going on in New York Jets football, he's put in the work to actually know that. It's an, and I like to do that as well, which is why we share that love. But for what I do for a profession, I need to know what 17-year-old trans kids are interested in, what 55-year-old, you know, middle America moms are fascinated by, why mom jeans trended into being popular, clothing for young women. Like mom jeans, for example, was something that I could have predicted 12 months before it happened. But you have to really be in there and watch like who's doing what and how and where. And like, do you know who Zach Bia is today? Or did you know who Zach Bia was 4 years ago? Those are two very different games. And I do that across everything. Awesome. Love you. Have the best day.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Find that clip.
I will, brother. I'm on it, Jack.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.